Hello, everyone. Welcome to this very first Matthew and Friends Hour. I'm Suzanne Ward, more often known as Susie, and it is a joy for me to be here with you today. I'm very grateful to Don Newsom for his gift of this hour each month to spend with you. Thank you, Don. Love and peace is Matthew's choice for today's program focus. He says they go hand in hand and are what our world needs most of all, without laying why I am hosting his show. Matthew is my son, the third of my four children. In 1980, when he was 17, he was fatally injured in a vehicle wreck. In the year that followed, several psychic readers told me that when the time was right, Matthew would communicate with me directly. That was many years ago. And back then, I thought that telepathy was such a rare gift, and I was so wrong about that. Every one of us has this capability as our birthright. It's part of our soul. Anyway, it was hard for me to believe that what the psychics had told me would really happen, but I never gave up hoping that they were right. It was just about this time in 1994, almost 14 years after Matthew died, when suddenly I heard his voice as clearly as if we were sitting side by side. He sounded that natural when he said, "Mother, this is Matthew. Yes, it really is me." And that was the beginning of our telepathic communication. I recorded our long daily conversations at the computer. At first, everything we talked about was personal. I wanted to know all about his life in heaven. He said the proper name of heaven is Nirvana. But he answered my many, many questions that had been in my mind during all those years before he and I connected. It was several months before Matthew told me that his death at such a young age was part of our family soul-level agreement, and his leaving was necessary so that I could keep my part of the agreement. My part was to record the information that he and many other souls would transmit to me, and I would prepare it for publication. Their messages would be the enlightenment, encouragement, and guidance that we would need to understand and be fearless about what is happening in this unprecedented time on Earth. I need to mention that for 35 years, I was immersed in Christian dogma, and everything that I heard from Matthew, God, and representatives of many powerful extraterrestrial civilizations has been absolutely mind-boggling. But I did follow through with my part of our family's agreement. It meant overcoming one obstacle after another for 9 years. But since May of 2003, the four Matthew books in English editions have sold in 26 countries, and some have been published in 9 other languages. And Matthew's monthly messages in English are circulated worldwide, and translations are on several websites in other countries. So that's who Matthew is, and now you understand why I'm hosting his Matthew and Friends Hour. Now I'll tell you about the Friends. They are literally all over the universe. About 9 or 10 years ago, when Matthew was ready to move on in his soul growth, he had two choices. The one he didn't choose was to reincarnate in a highly evolved civilization, because, as he said, the other possibility was so much more adventuresome. Well, that didn't surprise me. It was typical of Matthew to do that. For almost a decade, he has been traveling to worlds wherever he is invited to help upgrade the spirit realms that are to those civilizations what Nirvana is to Earth. And wherever he is, he manifests a body that fits into that population. So some of Matthew's friends are in body shapes and sizes and styles that we would have a hard time imagining. However, he did tell me that the more highly spiritually evolved a civilization is, the more beautiful their forms are. Others of his friends are in etheric bodies, the bodies of souls who are in spirit lifetimes. And some of his friends are right here on Earth. My guests are in the last category, of course, and I think that some of Matthew's friends in those other worlds are with us today, too. I'm sure that everyone who listens to BBS Radio knows that immensely significant changes are taking place on Earth, actually in the universe. Love is the key to creating these changes and what they offer to each of us. Love is the total essence of Creator and the most powerful energy in the cosmos. It's the life force of every soul in the cosmos. The supreme being of our universe, whether we call him God or by any other name, is the source of the love that is the original ingredient of our soul. Love and light are the same energy, inseparable, like two sides of a coin. They're just expressed differently. In our world of duality, we think of light and darkness as the visible opposites that they are. But when we think of light as the highest qualities in humankind and darkness as the basest characteristics, darkness is not the opposite of light. It is the absence of light, the absence of love. Love is everywhere in this world. We may be feeling and sending out love without even knowing it. If there's time at the end of this hour, I'll read Matthew's reply to someone's request for his definition of love. But if there isn't time and you would like to see that, please send me an email and I'll send you a copy of What is Love? And I'll give you my email and word addresses a little later on. Some time ago, Matthew told me to sign my correspondence Love and Peace, because simply writing or typing or reading those words sets higher vibrations in motion. But just think of the power that we are creating when we feel love and work for peace. I can't imagine anyone who could speak more passionately and persuasively about love and peace than my guest. It is my great pleasure and privilege to welcome Harold Becker and John Gold, co-founders of the Love Foundation, and Terry Mansfield, co-founder and executive director of the Arizona Department of Peace. Hello, Harold and John and Terry.
Hi, Susie and John and Harold.
Hi.
Now, since love is the key to peace, really, it is the key to the entire spectrum of goodness or godliness in humankind. Let's talk first about love. Harold, you came up with the idea to start the Love Foundation. What inspired you to do this?
Well, Susie, it actually came from a variety of circumstances that, even though the Love Foundation was officially brought together in 2000 when we incorporated, it has its roots back into earlier parts of my life. And then more significantly, around 1990, I made a conscious choice to move out of the old business world that I had become accustomed to and trained in with my college and my work, my managerial experience, and begin to go within and seek inside myself. And already in those first few months, moments, years, whenever they were around that 1990 time period, I began to formulate that it was all based on love. I had looked into a variety of self-help ideas, into a variety of techniques, understandings. I even not being religious of background in my own world, I decided I wanted to look into references that basically spoke of all the major religions. What I found was that all the major religions were based on master teachers, and all those master teachers had only one message, and that was love. So in that turn of around 1990-91, I started to realize that it was love that we were really into focusing about, self-acceptance, self-love, and then expressing that love around us. Well, in many ways, my first book came out in 1993, the Last Doorway, the Seventh Doorway, is the way I got my framework, was unconditional love. So from about that time period when I wrote the first book, I started to make my focus of life on unconditional love. And literally, I made my life foundation on unconditional love, which in the later years of the 90s, it actually turned into a deep meditation, actually in a moment of frustration, saying out to the universe, what am I here for? And the full idea of the Love Foundation came as, the best I can describe it, as an energetic packet of potential. And that's really kind of how it was born conceptually, was in the meditation. And then about a year later, when we decided to incorporate, it became, how do we bring this universal, practical, common sense, extremely simple, totally natural message of unconditional love back into humanity so that we could reach all people everywhere with this idea that love is within us. In fact, unconditional love is within us, and it's all around us, and that we can actually tap into it, use it, understand it, and become it. That's been now, 7 years later, the unfolding of this idea of how to help people remember unconditional love is also part of our birthright, as the word you used earlier.
So, all right, you founded the nonprofit Love Foundation in the year 2000. And it has spread to 93 countries, is that right?
Actually, as of yesterday, 95 countries.
Ah, I checked your website the day before that.
Yep, you got to keep up with these things.
You are growing.
Yes, and that's really a response to yet another life-changing moment in my experience. We knew when we started the Love Foundation that our mission was to inspire people to love unconditionally. And quite honestly, back in 2000, we had, you know, in order to submit our paperwork for the IRS and make everything official, it did make sense that we wanted to be a nonprofit, because we weren't really interested in creating a membership organization or another religion or anything of that nature. So the nonprofit really fit our model the best. Like, how could we bring this message out in a mass public way and be recognized for what it is we're doing? So the nonprofit was our vehicle, and then with this mission of inspiring people to love unconditionally, it became like, okay, now here are some programs, here are some ideas, but exactly how do you inspire people to love unconditionally? Well, the first couple of years, we started putting out the website and started putting out the messages and started getting people aware in little ways here and there, stepping stone process. And then literally in the Sunday morning of November 30th of 2003, I woke up very distinctly at 2 o'clock in the morning, again with this fully downloaded packet of energy called Global Love Day, very specifically Global Love Day for May 1st each year, and essentially the theme of Love Begins With Me. And we talked amongst the board, I announced it, brought it up, you know, is this something we would like to do? Well, everybody was in such favor, we decided to launch it, and that is literally the catalyst that brought us global, because once we had this idea of sharing essentially a celebration of humanity around the globe, where there is no universal celebration, that we could celebrate Global Love Day each May 1st, we started putting that idea before people in various organizations, individuals worldwide, and then even within the very first year, we had by Global Love Day of 2004, the very first event, we had, I think, in the neighborhood of 33 countries that people had responded to us. And it has grown from there each subsequent year. So Global Update has become one of the more significant vehicles for us to get this message out in a way that appeals to a broad range of people.
So it was really a response, a global response that sort of went in a wave around the world to the message on your website, and people would contact you and in essence say, tell me more, how can I participate?
Very much so. We have chosen to make the nonprofit also kind of the current cutting-edge virtual technology. In other words, we're using the power of the Internet and keeping, you know, the environmental resources to a minimum and really utilizing what is available now. And we also have had in our mind since we started this that we did not want to become another nonprofit organization that became solely absorbed in the idea of fundraising. We are using all of the universal laws to create everything we do with the Love Foundation. And so for us, we don't advertise. We don't ask for money. We don't advertise. Instead, we share through a growing network of volunteers. And literally, as I can say in a show like this, we've become magnetic to the idea of unconditional love, and people from around the planet have tapped into that magnetic field that says, where is this resource of unconditional love, this message, this idea of unconditional love? And it's been back to us. In fact, if you Google unconditional love, at this particular moment, we come up on the very first page. We are really becoming known around the world for the message of unconditional love, which is even surprises us, quite honestly, because, you know, we're just following our passion, as you mentioned, our vision and our ideas, and yet we've become the purveyors of this truly simple message that you would think would be coming through so many different resources and sources, and yet the Love Foundation is becoming synonymous with unconditional love.
thank you for explaining all of that, Harold. John, at what point did you come into the Love Foundation on a full-time basis?
I think the Love Foundation is, from the moment Harold and I, well, Harold conceived of it and brought it up, we talked about it, that it's a full-time part of my life. So no matter what I do, no matter what activity it is, this energy of unconditional love is the foundation within my life. So, you know, I have a day job, and I bring it into there, and it's been fascinating to watch people transform and respond to the energy of love. And I don't even use those words around, you know, sort of the general population, but they know there's something different. They know that when I smile, or that I care, that I can see through their layers of personality to their soul self. And what I end up seeing is I see them as angelic beings. And therefore, it gives me an advantage overall because I can see through the personalities. I can see through those wounds and so forth. So the Love Foundation has been so tremendous in my life because I've had to rise to the occasion. I've had to really hone my skills and bring myself up to a level to do justice to what the Love Foundation really stands for.
Do the two of you have an office staff, or, I mean, are you pretty much office-bound with the Love Foundation, especially you, Harold, now that I know that John has a day job?
Well, actually, it's another thing, and again, there's so many layers to the Love Foundation that are experimental based on this new earth, new world, new energy, new template that has really never been done before. And to track back again, I've got a master's degree in business, and I have worked in the financial world and what have you back in the 80s, and I also did a lot of volunteering for major nonprofits in the late 80s. And one of the things that I realized with my own personal transformation, that when we decided to launch the Love Foundation, because I have such a strong background in what has been done and what is even currently done, I have been rather determined to create a very different organic model. And one of the aspects of this organic model is creating essentially an all-volunteer organization and relying on natural, universal connections, trusting that the only way such connections would be brought to us is that there would be a mutual fellow angel on the other end. And what we have done in these past few years, again, is attempting a new way of group dynamics. Even though I so-called technically lead the organization, maybe the core vision behind it, it is my deep soul-based interest to create an organization that is new in the sense that everybody is a leader and everybody is a participant and everybody is there because they want to be there, which, of course, given my old business ways, I have to set aside my ego quite a bit to play in this new realm, to test it out, to try it out. So for us, literally, somewhat like what John was saying, our office is us. We are the office. Everywhere we go, everything we do, every moment we stay present in the current moment, fully conscious, fully aware, we are then capable of expressing unconditional love. The Love Foundation itself is an outer framework, representation, model, symbol, metaphor, whatever you'd like to call it, of this deeper source energy that we're choosing to embody. So for me, if we have offices, and the office, the physical office, means very little, the connections that we have made, we have currently at the moment 19 volunteer country coordinators, which represent about 15 different countries at the moment, throughout Africa, Australia, throughout parts of Europe. And these are all individuals that have found their way to the Love Foundation because we created a framework. And they said, all my life I've been looking for something like this. I've wanted to do something. I haven't known what it was. Here I am. And they've come to me saying, can I do this for you? As opposed to us going around looking. So what I have is a global entourage of mutual leaders in their own respective countries, cultures, communities, doing, and some have actually even registered the Love Foundation in their own country, to operate as a nonprofit, as kind of like part of an umbrella organization. So words kind of fail what we do, because these are new models that have not been on the planet before, at least not in these ways. So to say we have a staff, we have an incredibly dedicated staff of volunteers that I wouldn't trade for all the tea in China.
We also have friends like Matthew in high places.
Yes, it certainly is good to have the off-planet friends, too.
I rely on them for all my marketing, by the way.
The people that you were speaking about, who actually do coordinate activities in other countries, are they the Love Ambassadors, or in addition, or perhaps some of them are Love Ambassadors?
Actually, that is another program that we launched a couple of years ago, the Love Ambassador Program, and we actually keep those two separated. And an interesting side note is that the country coordinators kind of reveal themselves as a process of the original First Global Love Day coming out, and then we've been collecting them as we've gone through each subsequent Global Love Day, which, by the way, this year for 2007 will be our fourth annual Global Love Day. The Love Ambassador Program is something that we have never actually officially announced in any way other than it sits on our website, and it's been a very fascinating experience for me being so directly involved, because our Love Ambassador Program is a designation in a way, an honorary title that we share for people that either self-nominate themselves or they nominate another. And we call them the silent heroes of love. These are the people that you would probably never read about in the newspaper. You'd never hear of them. They would have seek no fame, no fortune, and yet being in their presence, you know that their life is dedicated to unconditional love. Well, when we launched the Country Coordinator Program, the country coordinators, the way they have come to us, they essentially don't need any title. They would rather not have a title. They're just so happy to be a part of what our vision stands for. And then the Love Ambassador Program, because we do open it up for anyone, again, to self-nominate or nominate another, we have created a list on the site that represents many more countries and a broad variety of people that have found just that program essentially independent of anything else we do. And I can't even begin to tell you how they would have been drawn to it. And if I could tell you the story behind each name, because we do go through an in-depth review and approval process. We don't just take any nomination. We ask for background material and vision statements as to why they feel they, you know, the person is all about unconditional love. Some of the stories would, I mean, literally, seemingly make your heart crack wide open and the tears rush through because of what people have overcome to understand that it's all about love. And we don't publish those stories. Our intent is just to share the name, share the title. These people, in many cases, I get emails back from them or I find out through the grapevine that people are actually taking the Love Ambassador title and putting it on their resumes and on their CVs and what have you around the world because they see it as, they perceive it as such a distinguished presentation. And yet if you go through that on our website and look through the names and look at the countries they represent, you would almost assume that they were related to our efforts with Global Love Day and the other things, and yet they are really a unique entity unto themselves.
On Global Love Day, May 1st, what types of activities sort of exemplify the purpose of the Global Love Day? I mean, I'm assuming that there are activities involved, meditation perhaps, or...
Well, if you check our site, the way we originally conceived of Global Love Day, again, was unique. It has the potential to be the first planetary holiday of its kind. For those that are outside the United States, they'll know that May 1st is actually known as Labor Day in many of the other Western-based countries. So it's already a holiday, and what has happened, because the date came to me in such a way that there was no reason to question it, we put it out, then we found out more about it. We have found that there's probably a very ancient historical significance to May 1st being Love Day, literally, and that it's been distorted and covered up and all the way up to what present-day usages are. For us, Global Love Day was never intended for us to dictate how others would respond to it. We wanted people to, first and foremost, take a day, one day out of the year, and just focus on love. Self-love, forgiveness, healing, whatever they wanted to feel, do, but just basically spend a day contemplating love for love's sake and for no other reason other than love. Well, human creatures that we are, there has been a tendency over the last couple of thousand years that people like to be told what to do. They like to be shown what to do. They want somebody to tell them, you know, exactly what do I do on Global Love Day. Well, we clearly state what our intention is just to be love. If they do nothing more, to contemplate, meditate, pray, whatever it is that they choose as a vehicle, if they want to then expand upon that in greater ways, like gather family, gather communities, associations, whatever it is that they feel that they're inspired, literally. We want the people to be inspired internally from their end rather than telling them what our inspiration is. To facilitate it, we have on our website a whole variety of sections that cover kind of the schools, the communities, organizations, businesses, and we give a very brief series of potential ideas more to jumpstart their thinking. And that's really the purpose of having it on there. It's not that we want anybody to go out and do it our way. We, quite the opposite. We actually want people to come from within, create from within, really to learn how to hone that skill within themselves. So for us, you know, we're basically saying, let's celebrate our humanness, let's celebrate our humanity, let's celebrate us for us. And how you do that is really up to the individual or the group or the culture or the country or whoever's doing whatever they're doing.
I think it would help just to briefly explain that Harold's definition of unconditional love is an unlimited way of being. And actually his new book is of that same title. But he goes on to explain that love exists on all levels of our being. It's physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. So really love does exist on all those levels. And that unlimited or unconditional would just simply be removing any limits or restrictions or judgments. So for us, unconditional love as an unlimited way of being can mean anything to anybody, but for as it relates to, say, Global Love Day, that could be a day where somebody could say, you know, I'm going to go and forgive somebody. I'm going to go and make amends with a long-lost sibling or, you know, or simply go for a walk on a beach. You know, something that would be self-love or removing restrictions or a quiet celebration of themselves. So that might add a little light to it. And then one of the other programs that is in conjunction with Global Love Day is our Art, Essay, and Poetry Invitational. And that was designed to go in conjunction with Global Love Day and really appeal to school kids and stuff, but we realized that that too was a restriction, so we've opened it up to children of all ages, those young at heart. And we addressed both art, essay, and poetry because we realized that not everybody is strong in just, say, art, but they might enjoy poetry or something. And so it's just one of those things that allowed us to open up the creativity a little bit more and to reach into schools and church groups and stuff like that and just have fun with this day.
You know, speaking about that, in fact, this whole time that we've been talking about Global Love Day, it popped into my mind a few times that in this country we have Thanksgiving Day. It's almost as if, people who are aware of their blessings live with Thanksgiving in their hearts. That's just how they live. But by setting aside one day called Thanksgiving Day, and in this case, Global Love Day, it's almost as if you are honoring the entire life by setting aside a day that emphasizes this quality in our lives. Any comments?
Oh, yeah, I agree.
I like what you're saying.
synchronistically speaking here, just shortly before we got on the air, I was checking my emails, and Mike Quincy is a receiver whom I greatly respect, and I didn't have time to read all of St. Germain's message, but just through the little window in the bottom of my screen, the first sentence of St. Germain's message today is, love is the key to almost everything in your life.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think we can, I don't think anyone can ever say too much about love, but I want to integrate this now. Love and peace.
Which is actually,
Harry, would
which
you,
is actually kind of interesting because one something we've actually been, you know, putting together for our publicity for the book is that it's essentially probably the single greatest thing that all of humanity seeks and simultaneously avoids. In other words, people, all of us on this planet, are seeking this sense of total self-acceptance and being accepted and the full understanding. And yet, even when we present love to people, it's fascinating to see how they resist it and how they push away, even when love is right there. You know, because we've become so ingrained with the absence of love, even though we desperately seek it in the core of our being. So it's quite a paradox, and it's quite an interesting opportunity to be in the situation that we are, sharing this message at a time where everybody agrees it's all about love, and yet to actually inspire the people to take the steps to embody the love is a whole nother opportunity.
Yes. And I think that this is part of the remnants of third density world that we're living in, that there is so much around us that seems fearful, that we feel so vulnerable, and it's almost as if we are equating love with in love,
right,
and are afraid of being hurt, and yet unlimited love, or unconditional love, an unlimited way of being, really almost lets us avoid the peaks and valleys of the in love thing. I really want to move on.
Absolutely.
To.
I want to hear about Terry.
Yes, exactly. Terry, please tell us about the National Department of Peace campaign and the purpose of their conference in Washington, D.C., February 3rd to the 5th.
Oh, I will. Susie, can you all hear me?
I hear John better than I heard Harold.
Same
or
here.
You, Terry. And I'm just hoping that this is a matter of our phones, and that the listeners are really getting, getting all of us in equally audibly.
Okay, well, I can hear you all. I'm focusing on hearing with my heart because it has been a little bit different, but I just wanted to make sure that you could hear me right now.
Well, if you could speak up, perhaps that would...
Okay, I'm talking pretty loud, so I'll just keep on talking at this level, if that's good for you.
Yeah, just go ahead. I'm really eager to know about this conference.
Well, Susie, the Department of Peace campaign is a grassroots campaign that started off about 4 years ago with only 200 volunteers like myself. And Marianne Williamson started the campaign in Washington so that we could take the message of the Department of Peace legislation back to our own states. And so for 4 years, grassroots movement has been building and building and building. And like John and Harold were talking about unconditional love, we've been practicing that along with unconditional peace. And it's been quite a blessing for those of us who have wrapped our arms around this project, this campaign, to create a cabinet-level Department of Peace. And so what happened 4 years ago, when the first conference was held in Washington, D.C., we were actually trained how to go into our congressional representatives' offices, into our senators' offices in Washington, to begin a dialogue. We always went into the offices with open arms. My license plate says hugs, and so we'd always ask permission if we could leave the office with a hug and take pictures and just exchange little stories about what are important things to us and to our families for peace and for love and for the cessation of violence on the planet. What is important to our elected officials? Why are they serving in Washington? And what motivates them to want to make a difference for their families and for our country? And by emanating this unconditional peace and love that we all practice every day by going into our elected officials' offices and into our meetings back here in Arizona and, of course, throughout the country, people begin to understand that this Department of Peace is about working with, not against. It's about working with our military to bring in mediation and conflict resolution. It's about to find solutions that are nonviolent solutions. It's about sharing our stories with each other so that we can find that heart connection and find what we have in common and how we actually have so much in common as humans on this planet. And so this Department of Peace campaign has enabled us to transcend the old verbiage of war dialogue, conflict dialogue. And what's happened is that because we are transcending that old energy of conflict, of duality, and just focusing on being peace and on sharing peace and on demonstrating peace, every day that's what we get to do. And so there has been an amazing transformation going on in our country, in our states. When we talk about a Department of Peace campaign, people understand that it's not a new idea. The Department of Peace idea goes back to 1792, when one of our founding fathers, Dr. Benjamin Rush, wrote an essay about a Department of Peace in our brand new little Republic of America. And even President Dwight Eisenhower named one of his advisors to be his cabinet-level advisor for peace and disarmament. And since the end of World War II, over 100 bills have been introduced into Congress to create a Department of Peace or an Office of Peace. And I believe what's happening today, along with what John and Harold have been talking about, Susie, and the work that you do with Matthew, is that there is a consciousness shifting going on in all aspects, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and people can't always put their finger on what it is that's changing and shifting, but what it is that we are opening up our hearts and we are really not only loving ourselves and loving each other, but going into that state of peace. And this Department of Peace grassroots campaign, as I said earlier to you, Susie, in an email, it's more than creating a cabinet-level department, and it's more about any politician. And Congressman Kucinich told us this 4 years ago. He said, you know, this is about helping to shift the whole consciousness of humanity, about that shining beacon of light on the hill. And so the Department of Peace conference next week in Washington, February 3rd, 4th, and 5th, will be working with old volunteers like myself, I should say experienced volunteers like myself,
yes,
and new volunteers who are just beginning to see how we can all, because everything in life is about politics, really, one form or another, it's about politics. It's our choice how we express this politics, and then it's our responsibility to seek the highest ground that we can take ourselves to. When we talk about a shift, a political shift, which is what this Department of Peace represents, it's a paradigm shift for our planet. And so we would not only be working on creating peace on Earth, peace in our countries, peace in our communities, but also establishing the peaceful contact, the exopolitical, diplomatic, peaceful contact among other cultures in other planets and other galaxies. And so the Department of Peace campaign next week will be focusing on, first of all, understanding the civics of American history, and then being able to speak intelligently when we go up on the Hill on February 5th to talk to our senators and their staff and our congressional representatives and their staff, and then to be in the House of Representatives on February 5th when Congressman Kucinich and many, many, many co-sponsors introduced the bill for the fifth time since July of 2001 to create a cabinet-level Department of Peace. And so that's where I'll be next week, along with many of my colleagues from Arizona and hundreds of volunteers from all 50 states and several foreign countries. And so that's what's going on next week, and that's what we've been doing here in Arizona, focusing on inclusivity, that everyone is invited to be part of this process of creating a culture of peace, and a dialogue, a Department of Peace. And we have support from the military and from very conservative friends and very liberal friends and people of various religious faiths or of no religious faith, but people whose eyes are opening wider and wider as their hearts are opening wider and wider to realize that we are part of this great shift that's occurring. And when we let go of our fears and let go of our judgments and really see each other with eyes of love and eyes of peace, then we not only begin our own healing process, but then the healing process emanates out into our planet just like a great tsunami of healing, a great tsunami of love and peace. And so that's a little bit of what we've been doing both in Arizona and nationally, and now internationally, Susie. You know, there are 24 countries working on creating departments of peace.
Yeah,
and it's just so exciting, like what John and Harold were talking about, the knowing that something wonderful and incredible is happening on Earth, and the fact that the media are beginning to talk about it, and the fact that our neighbors are talking about it, and businesses, and the medical community, and the religious community, and the business community, it's almost like, wow, something wonderful is happening, and I want to be part of it.
Well, I think that it seems that this is a process of formalizing into governments what the people are doing. For a few years now, the numbers of people who are involved in peace rallies, meditation groups for peace, I mean globally, not just, you know, a little group here and there, but global meditations at the same time. This has just grown exponentially. It seems that, like you said, people's hearts and minds are opening. And if we think less than 100 years ago at World War I, everybody just took for granted, oh, yes, you know, we've got to have this war. And then everybody was very patriotic and going out and there were no protests about, well, let's settle things amiably. And just look how in 90 years, the various wars that have come in between World War I and now, and people want to end war and conflict and violence and to negotiate and to live in harmony. So it just seems that what you are working on and the bill and many, many others is bringing into focus a structure for this. Like the Love Foundation, however loose that structure is, because I don't want to put the limitations that structure implies there, but it is an awakening, hearts opening worldwide. And it's an excitement to see this and to be participating in it.
That's so true, Susie. And what I love is when I hear people's stories. I love to hear people's stories. I just get so excited like a cheerleader. I just want to do backflips when I hear these wonderful stories. And one that I'll share with you real quick is a friend of mine, Dr. Mark Gopin, is a rabbi, and he teaches at George Mason University in Virginia, and his specialty is conflict resolution among religions, especially Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. And a few years ago, he was invited to Jerusalem for various peace talks, and one of the meetings that was set up for him was with Yasser Arafat, when Mr. Arafat was still alive. And Dr. Gopin was a little nervous at first about this because as a rabbi, he understood that Mr. Arafat did not have a great love for Jewish people. But he wanted to transcend his belief about who Mr. Arafat was as a person. And they got to talking about their favorite things when they were children. And Mr. Arafat shared a story that when he was a little 8-year-old boy, his favorite thing to do was to stand at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem next to all the rabbis. And as the rabbis were in deep meditation and praying their prayers, their Jewish prayers, little 8-year-old Mr. Arafat was standing and praying his little prayers of Islam. And I'm picturing this little boy and these rabbis, these little Arab boy and these little the Jewish rabbis standing next to one another, praying their prayers of love and peace and healing. And so when I heard that story and then I share that story, what that helps me to do and that helps others to see is that a preconceived idea or notion that we may have of someone can instantly evaporate and disappear when we again find that connection and find what we have in common with each other. And it begins to bring the walls down, the walls of secrecy, the walls of judgment, the walls of fear. When people hear extraordinary stories, and I have just hundreds and thousands of these stories, of people who are finding that peace within by letting go of old ideas and old notions and old concepts that have kept them just kind of imprisoned in their own little minds. But when they hear these exciting, beautiful, uplifting stories from people that they would never expect to hear these stories, it just changes them in an instant. And when that energetic shift occurs more and more frequently, there is a dissipation and a de-escalation of the fear and the negativity on our planet, and people are very easily transcending into the compassion and the kindness and the joy that is just taking over now, the joy of our children, the joy of music, the joy of dance and art. And so it's just exciting to see how, oh, yes, there is a Department of Peace legislation and a campaign, and it's global, and I see it going into the galaxies and into the universes, and I've already volunteered to be an ambassador for peace out in space. And so I see that what we're all talking about today on this show is basically the same thing. We
Absolutely.
Each one
that
of us
that was very well said, and
yeah,
I wanted to
we're
say
we're all
that,
choosing to change, to be that highest part of divinity that we were created to be, and we're doing it with love and peace and sharing our stories. And thank you, Susie, for bringing us together. Thank you, Don, for bringing us all together. And so these are experiences like today, which people will be able to listen to later on. They realize we're just regular people. And all of us who are talking right now on the radio, we're regular beings, and yet we are extraordinary souls. We are extraordinary, as are all 6.5 billion souls on this planet. Each one of us is an extraordinary soul with great hearts and just living in peace. And one by one, we're awakening to that.
Oh, you have all said such wonderful things today. I'm keeping my eye on the clock. Terry, would you please give websites? I noticed that you also have Peace Alliance. We didn't have a chance to get into that, but I did just want to mention this, that also synchronistically, I received an announcement of the Student Alliance Peace Day.
Yes.
On February 2nd.
Yes.
So the students are getting behind this too.
And I'll be there for that. I'm going a day or two early, so I will be there next week for the Student Peace Alliance.
All right.
So let me give the website real quick.
If you would like to give your email address,
uh-huh.
Please do that. But
okay.
Do please give the two websites.
Yes, ma'am. My personal email address is Terry, T-E-R-R-I, at azdopcampaign.org. That's A-Z for Arizona, D-O-P for Department of Peace, campaign.org. And our state website is www.azdopcampaign.org. And our national website is www.thepeacealliance.org. And they're both extraordinary websites full of information, things that we've done, things that we're going to do, and just ways that people can get involved in any way that touches the passion in their heart, how they want to make a difference in their community, in their schools, in their workplace, in their churches. And I tell you, Susie and John and Harold, we have had so much fun working on this, and people can tell. And I think people gravitate toward us and toward you when they realize how much fun you're having. You know, people, that's that child inside of us. We're all remembering when we were little kids how much fun we used to have with just daily things that we could do. And as adults, I think we're remembering to play and to have fun. And that's when people open up and say, oh, I want to be part of that too.
The child within.
Yep, the child within.
Thank you, Terry. Now, Harold and John, would you please give the same thing, email addresses if you'd like, but definitely a website where people can find out more about the Love Foundation.
Sure. For anybody who wants to reach me personally, it's hwbecker@thelovefoundation.com. That's my email address. And the website is www.thelovefoundation.com. That's thelovefoundation.com. And also on our site, you can access, there are several different ways to contact us directly on the website also. So either way, through my email address personally or through the website, you can find our various contact forms and all the other information for Global Love Day, the Love Foundation, Love Ambassador Program, the Artistry Poetry Invitational, just a whole variety of information all about unconditional love.
Thank you. Now, my email address is suzy@matthewbooks.com, two T's in Matthew, plural books, and the website is www.matthewbooks.com. I would like to mention before we all say goodbye and thanks to each other, the next Matthew and Friends Hour, well, it's this very same time, Wednesday, February 21st. My guests will be Dan Rezac and Scott Mowry, who are co-hosts of the Truth Avengers teleconference.
Wonderful.
The pathway through love to peace, or really you can't even separate those two.
Nope.
But this requires exposing the deceit and the corruption that the darkness has been causing. Terry and John and Harold, thank you so much for being with me today, and to all of our listeners, please get in touch with us. I'm sorry there was no time for your comments or questions. I'll try to do better next time. Love and peace to you all.
Thank you, Susie.
Thanks, Susie.
Thanks. Love you.
Bye-bye. Love you, too.
Bye-bye, dears. Bye.